This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And this is The Deep Dive, and I am Brooke Spector. And today's guest, we're going to talk to Magdalene Minar, a name that will probably be familiar to a number of you listening. She is one of South Africa's contemporary music treasures. She's performed all over the place in this country and abroad and in various kinds of things. But her academic training was at the University of Cape Town College of Music as an opera singer. And she went to the opera studio in Cape Town. And she's done all these wonderful roles, Gilda out of Rigoletto and Zerlina and Don Giovanni and things like that. And she came back from overseas and now she is with us. She is the artistic director for the Cape Town Opera. And Cape Town Opera, just coincidentally, tonight is having its launch of the opera Tosca. Now, Tosca is one of my favorites. Tosca's got everything in it. It's got sex and violence and political intrigue and evil, diabolical police chiefs. I mean, it's got everything. But we'll talk about that, but we're going to talk about more than just the opera. We're going to talk about the place of opera and what it means, because among other things, Magdalene has made something of a second career out of taking the love of music to very young people, little children, to bring them along into this well before they get to the point where they say, opera, oh gosh, ugh. I don't want to do that. They're already entranced by it. Magdalene, it's a real delight and a pleasure and an honor to have you with us today.
Thank you, Brooks. Likewise.
We've heard her perform a number of times, and she's got one of these wonderfully flexible voices that gets to do more than just opera, gets to do regular music sometimes, experimental music other times. I sort of think of her as South Africa's answer to Barbara Hannigan together with Kathleen Battle, sort of mixed together. They all have done interesting things well beyond the normal range of opera. But it's still your first love, am I right?
Absolutely, and thank you. I mean, Barbara Hannigan and Kathleen Battle, that's a huge compliment from you. Thanks, Brooks. Yes, I mean, as you might have noticed, I'm so thankful being able to explore all these genres, but very much singing is a huge part of my life still. I still perform. I'm very choosy and picky about what I do at the moment, and it's been some years since I've done a role in an opera because of the directing kind of taking a precedent in my career. And I would say between singing, concerts and oratorios and directing, those are my two main passions at the moment.
Well, the material that your publicist handed us is something I didn't realize. Your philosophy of life said, quote, "The art of being a cockroach, how not to be a starving artist."
Yeah.
You better explain that a little bit for us.
Okay, well, it's a workshop that I've been giving to fellow singers and fellow musicians for quite some years now, over 10 years now, because I grew up in a very artistic household. My parents are both architects. They both work for themselves. My father still practices architecture and he's a freelancer. My brother is an artist and he's a freelancer. My sister-in-law is a set designer and a scenic painter and she's a freelancer, and we all thrive. And I don't see the point of calling any artist starving or, you know, that whole notion of artists not making a living. And I still to this day, if you can believe it, have people asking me, so what do you really do to make your money, make ends meet? Which is just bizarre. So I've been doing these kind of, it's almost like a business workshop where I teach musicians how to, you know, do their taxes and how to negotiate a fee, but it goes far deeper than that. Obviously it goes to something that I learned at the New York Opera Studio by a brilliant business coach there, who said that you have to wear the many hats and you have to be your own CEO. You have to be your own marketing manager. You have to be your own director, sometimes your own psychologist, your own fitness coach. And it becomes tough being a freelance, especially as a singer. So that's very much part of the philosophy. Why a cockroach? Well, yes, we all want to step on cockroaches, but They are the ones that are going to outlive us when the world ends. You know, they can survive the atom bombs. And what I find fascinating about these, you know, millions of years old creatures is that they collectively know that they have to go and search for food in the smallest cracks, and they will find food anywhere. And that's the mentality. So that's my logo is a big, big old Parktown prawn with a giant crown on her head. So that's the philosophy of being a cockroach.
I like that. I like that a lot. You have to be an artist. You have to fulfill your inner need to perform or practice or act or sing or paint or whatever it might be. But you also have to feed the stomach and pay the rent and balance your checkbook and do all the rest of it. That sort of reminds me of the old joke. What's the most important thing, most important words that a artist or a musician must learn? Would you like French fries or a salad with your main course, sir?
Wow.
Because so many artists and would-be musicians, their second career has been as a waiter.
I mean, that's the stigma. And certainly I'm not saying that being a freelance musician, especially in this country, is going to make you drive a Rolls Royce. But absolutely, I do really believe that also with our current cultural climate in the country, that there are so many opportunities that hopefully our musicians and artists don't have to, you know, take people's orders.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the life goal, I think, of every artist.
Absolutely.
You've picked Tosca as an opera you're bringing to Johannesburg. The last time you did something here, it was for Sempre Opera, and you did The Marriage of Figaro. And it was there was a distinctly contemporary feeling to it. It had the kind of thing that we imagine Mozart might have wanted to see on stage, a little bit of salaciousness, a couple of double entendres in the physical theater version, not changing the words, not changing the music, but letting us know that we're looking back at the 18th century, but we're really sitting in the 21st. And
right.
In Tosca, you've got an opera which is pretty serious stuff. It takes place in Rome, just as Napoleon's troops are defeating the Austrians a few hundred kilometers to the north. Rome is still run basically by an evil, mendacious, rapacious police chief in the nature of Scarpia. You have artists who are busy trying to overthrow the government, as it were, and you have a female singer who's in love with one of them and comes to a timely end, I guess, really, of her choice, even though life has now closed in on her with all these things. And it's even got a touch of gender-based violence in it.
Absolutely. Not just a touch. It's, that's absolutely, I mean, the themes
that's
are.
That's the core. Fair enough.
That's the Figaro that we did last year. It's the same thing. For me, directing a period piece, I find that there's a trend worldwide to try and reinvent operas. So you get given the chance to direct a Figaro and you set it in Mars, in a spaceship. I want to go back to period productions where we celebrate the fashion of the time, where we celebrate the makeup and the wigs and the gestures and airs and graces of the time. But always remembering that these people are real people. And I think maybe that's what you're seeing in the contemporary aspect of it. That is very much my style of directing. And it's something I love doing is to create an incredibly visible, well thought out, layered, developed character in everyone on stage. So not just the three leads or the five leads, but also the in Tosca, Spoletta, who comes in and has these interactions. I mean, we've got a whole backstory for Spoletta and he only sings 10 lines. The same with Sharone, the same with the jailer, the same with Roberti, who does the torturing. That for me becomes incredibly important. And I must tell you, I had the final dress rehearsal last night, had one of the most, one of the biggest compliments where someone came to me and said, this is like watching cinema It's like being in a thriller. And that's what I want. I want you to be able to connect with this character and go, wow, this feels modern in a way because I can relate to it because it's something that could happen now. But the fact that it's set 200 years ago or 400 years ago doesn't really make a difference. In fact, it just makes it more interesting.
This is the Deep Dive in Brooks Spector, and we're delighted to be speaking with Magdalene Minar, artistic director, Cape Town Opera, among other things, the current production starts tonight of Puccini's Tosca.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooks Spector.
This is the Deep Dive. This is Brooks Spector, and we are chatting with Magdalene Minar, artistic director, Cape Town Opera, with the new production of Tosca, with the updated Tosca, in which the jailer and the torturer, they get to have their moment in the sun. And I have to ask you this. Don't laugh. How have you arranged the mattress for the last scene?
Well, can I just say, you're expecting her to jump off the bridge, right?
And that's not going to happen. Yes. You're not going to have that.
That's not going to happen. We are going to pull the rug from underneath you, and the mattress you won't even see. That's all I'm going to say. Dot, dot, dot.
And for those of you who don't know about this, there is a famous story, and I spent time tracking this down, took place in 1951. A slightly Zaftig singer leapt off the parapet of the San Angelo fortress, and as she tried to kill herself, the mattress pushed her back up, so you saw the skirt floating in the breeze at the end. You have taken that one in hand, and you're not going to give me that pleasure. You're going to do something
I'm not giving you that pleasure, but I must say I've read of so many stories where that scene just goes to complete smithereens. So that's not the reason I chose to change the ending. I just, for my own sake, love to do things in a fresh way. And there are a couple of things where we took a slight bit of artistic license. But as you might know, I don't like going too far from what the librettist and the composer had in mind. I really do feel that in opera, we need to honor that. And in musical theater around the world, that really is mostly the case, is that, you know, with all the blueprint productions that we have, people kind of stick what it is supposed to be. And I want to kind of go back there. I feel like we've taken, especially in Germany, I feel like opera is sometimes going in a weird direction for shock value. And I don't always agree with that. But so very much we are sticking to the script, to the letter, but there are these one or two places where I've decided, well, you know what, let's just rethink this a little bit.
I like that. I once saw a video of a production of Turandot, which took place, as far as I could tell, on the holodeck of the Starship Enterprise. It was bizarre beyond description. Music was lovely, but I mean, goodness gracious. Now, tell me a bit about the cast. This is a South African cast. These are singers from this country who have gotten their training here and some cases abroad, but they're local folks.
Absolutely. So when I started at Cape Town Opera a year and a half ago as artistic director, that was the first thing that I wanted to change, is that we, especially post-COVID, start focusing purely on South African talent. Because what often happens is that we bring in this star name from Europe or wherever it is, and they end up not sounding as good as our own singers. Mm. And the gift that COVID gave us, for better or for worse, is that a lot of the singers, of our very own singers who were making careers in Germany and in France and England and America, had to come back or wanted to come back to family. And they were, let's say, stuck in South Africa. And I had a conversation with a couple of them. Lukanyo Moyake is one of them. And I said, listen, what if I offered you a permanent position as a soloist in the company? And he jumped at it. I made that same decision years ago to not go to Europe and have a career in, you know, overseas, because I love my country too much. I love my people too much. I, you know, ended up having a family here. And I love the fact that is starting to happen. That, I mean, in our cast, all three of our leads have families in South Africa, children, spouses or partners. You know, it's becoming more of the norm to have a family. And I mean, as you know very well, up to very recently, it wasn't the norm to have a family for an opera singer. You are always jetting around, you know, with a permanent suitcase packed. I remember Dion van der Walt years ago saying he always has a suitcase packed because sometimes the phone rings in the middle of the night and you have to jump on a plane in 2 hours time. So he just keeps a permanent suitcase and there you go. So that for me is the one great thing about having the South African singers year. What I'll also tell you is that when you listen to this opera tonight, you will close your eyes and you will think that you are in La Scala or at the Metropolitan or at the Covent Garden. I mean, it is the level of singing by our three leads, Nobulumko Mdlokeza, Lukanyo Moyake and Conroy Scott, is absolutely world class. And not only that, not only the singing is world class, but oh my goodness, the level of acting. I mean, it's flabbergasting.
That's the thing that I like seeing now in productions, especially the, for example, the one that we saw that you had the hand in last year, The Marriage of Figaro. The acting was, you know, it engaged me. I felt I was looking at and listening to actual characters rather than great voices. And that's so important. Now, let me shift gears a little bit for you, but there's always been in this country, sadly, something of a stigma about opera for many people, that it was European, colonial, old-fashioned, not ours, should be consigned to the ash can of history, you know, pick your pejorative phrase. I don't think it's true, and obviously you don't either, but how do you, as a creative person, make that change in people's minds? How do you drag people into something that they're predisposed to be a little bit wary of and say, hey, that wasn't so bad. I didn't get hurt. I enjoyed it. I felt something.
You know, for me, I love opera because I listened to it from the minute I was born. Or in utero, I was really listening to opera because my parents loved opera.
That's the best place to start, actually, I'm told.
Absolutely. And I mean, they're not aficionados or massive opera snobs. I mean, often I have to still explain the story to them. So it's not like they are, you know, the picture that you have of the opera audience with the monocle and the fur, but they enjoy the music and they love going to the opera and seeing a new production. And I think that that is the best thing. And that is why I have so much of a focus on early exposure to classical music and specifically also opera, because I believe that if you are exposed to it from a very young age, your appetite and potentially for a later adult palate just becomes so much greater. So also secondly, I get extremely irritated when people combine the word colonialism with opera, because it is simply not true. Opera has existed in this country for many years, yes, but opera has become very much an inclusive medium. And in fact, in the olden days of PACT and KPAB and all of these big government institutions, which yes, it was fantastic. We received the money and everyone was earning a salary, but it was fraught with its own problems. From a very early age, before apartheid even fell, there was a lot of inclusivity in opera. And in fact, it was quite apparent that the opera fraternity was just not going to say no to someone because of their skin color. So for me, people like Angelo Gobato have been, and you know, the Enos group in Cape Town have been instrumental in change and in transformation. So I don't even see those two things as being connected.
Eoan Group continues in a way. I mean, there's an historical memory of it, but there's also going on here composers, local contemporary composers, who are writing operas, composers who are white, composers who are black. They're writing interesting operas, in some cases about contemporary events, and in other cases they're mining history. Do you have plans to draw on that new tradition as well in work for the future?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, already the amount of new works that I've commissioned in my career is hopefully, you know, something to leave behind, you know, when I leave this beautiful place. But I will certainly continue doing that. And there are a couple of incredibly exciting projects in the pipeline. There's an opera written by Zakes Mdaa. There's an opera written on the trial of Oscar and Riva. I can name about seven different versions. I mean, I don't want to give too much away because some of these projects are really in infant stage. But this is something that I'm very passionate about, and creating what America got so right from the 1950s onward is to really invest in their own operas. And that's why now we have this wealth of fantastic American operas to see and hear. And, they're very expensive to get the rights for, but hopefully we can achieve that same thing. And I am dead set on being a part of that, and offering the platform for composers, because let's face it, opera is an incredibly expensive art form.
Even in the studio productions, it still takes, we have to take a station break. We'll be right back. This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, and we're delighted to be speaking with Magdalene Minar, Artistic Director of Cape Town Opera. Tonight, they're opening her production of Tosca. We'll be right back.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And this is The Deep Dive, and I am Brooke Spector, and we're speaking today with Magdalene Minar, Artistic Director, Cape Town Opera, and we're talking about the world of opera in South Africa, as well as the current production, which opens this evening at the Joburg Theatre, of Tosca, one of the great opera stories. It's got everything in it. Sex, love, death, violence, gender-based violence, rapacious police chiefs. I mean, you name it. And it's also ripped out of the headlines, as it were, the headlines of 1800. One of the things in your notes that I saw about this production, you note that the role itself, the lead role of Tosca, Floria Tosca, the singer, it's a hard role. She's basically on stage singing most of the opera, and she has to go up and down the continuum of emotions in almost all possible ways, and she has to endure all the difficulties, her partner's torture, the police chief's interest in her life, and in the end, things go badly for her. Talk to me a little bit about how you approached coaching and guiding the woman who is singing this role, Nobulumko Ngeza.
Yeah, almost, yes, very, very, very close. So I've known Nobulumko since we studied together in the early 2000s, and we did some really cool productions together. The one was with Brett Bailey, a very, very wacky staging of Macbeth where we were in first year, and we were wrapped in brown paper with giant cow horns, and we were painted white, and we were, as Brett referred to us, as the Spohos. So that was my and Nobulumko's first production together, and we had a lot of fun. I mean, we were completely green. I cannot tell you how wonderful it is to 23 years later work with her in this capacity. She's the leading lady. I'm directing her, and she's such an incredible performer. She is not only, I think, a world-class soprano, and my goodness, the fact that she hasn't been swooped up with that voice just baffles me completely. But she's an incredibly shy person, and once you get to know her, she's very internal. So her process to find Tosca takes time. And it's been like baking an incredible cake. It's been wonderful to see how she finds this layered character of Floria Tosca and how she's embodying the diva. And the other night we had a surprise for her. Our costume designer, Marlies from Imagica Designs, came and she kind of showed her the dress for the first time, and we were filming it, and Nobulunko burst into tears, and she was just looking at this incredible red dress with the golden, you know, patterns on it. And she just stood there touching this dress, and I could see how she has connected with this character. And I mean, it's not something you can really describe to someone, but we took her on stage and we did some lighting tests with her in this magnificent creation. It's those layers that an artist like makes her so great. It's like the first bit is singing it beautifully. That's tick, let's go, fantastic, pitch perfect every time. The next layer is finding that through line, finding the character, finding how you navigate going from the jealousy of entering the church and looking for this woman that you think your partner is cheating on you with, and then finding these signs and Scarpia kind of getting into her head, all the way through to her seeing her partner being tortured and how they've ripped out his fingernails, and her being almost raped and then raped by Scarpia. Then the second act ends and we go into this frantic third. I mean, it starts really beautifully and quietly with the shepherd boy, and we go into this third act where she is completely manic and out of it. And she's got this letter from Scarpia, who she's just killed, that says that they've got a safe escape, and that they can, that the execution is going to be a mock one. And she's so excited. And then she waits for her lover to be mock executed. And then she flips him over and he's dead. And then she kills herself. To navigate that through line without costumes, without sets, in a rehearsal room is quite a task. 2 weeks ago, when we started moving into Joburg Theatre, you could see how those extra layers are coming on for all three of the main characters, but very much so for her. As you start seeing levels, as you start seeing, oh, this is what this giant cathedral looks like inside. This is where I genuflect and do my prayer for my God that I believe in, because she's an incredibly religious woman. And it's been exceptional to see her unfold.
We'll tell you something about the opera you may not know, believe it or not. The opera takes place as Napoleon has just defeated the Austrians at the Battle of Marengo.
Marengo.
Do you know there is a famous chicken dish named after that battle?
No ways. I'm going to have to try that.
Chicken Marengo. And the story is that Napoleon's chef could not find butter to fry the chicken in the first part of the dish. And so he used the local olive oil from northern Italy.
Oh, wow.
And it was christened Chicken Marengo.
I love that.
Just after the victory. So you can serve that as part of the cast dinner, maybe.
I love that. I love that. That's fantastic.
And it was one of the first meals my wife tried to make, start to finish, from scratch. Unfortunately, it takes about 3 hours to prepare. So we ate rather late.
Oh, wow. Incredible. And is it tasty? Do you feel the battle in it?
Yes, it's lovely. Chicken and olives and various vegetables. And it uses, I forget which wine is called for, but it's quite a culinary triumph. Look it up.
Excellent.
There's going to be a rush now to find this in cookbooks. I know it. We're going to take one more break. My studio isn't telling me to do it, but I'm saying we'll put a break in here, because we're going to have to shift quickly to do a catch up with the second version of our Zoom connection. I want you to think about this question and perhaps answer it for me. How do we convey to people, to audiences who aren't familiar with opera, that this is something that they want to enjoy and want to be a party to, even putting aside this critique as being colonial and elitist, the man with the monocle and all that? How do you bring people to it who aren't yet aware of it and who haven't yet bought into the idea that an awful lot of it is like a giant television soap opera condensed into 2 hours? How do we get people there? Now, think about that just for a minute, and then we'll come right back. This is Brooke Spector with The Deep Dive, and we're speaking with Artistic Director of the Cape Town Opera, Magdalene Minar, and we're talking about the production, which opens tonight, of Tosca at the Joburg Theatre. And if you don't have your tickets yet, please get them. I recommend this. Just before I even see it, I can tell you I recommend it. So we'll be back in a minute.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, and we're speaking with Magdalene Minar, and she is, as you know, the artistic director and has been for about a year and a half of the Cape Town Opera. And this is, I guess, the second production that you brought to Johannesburg. The first was The Marriage of Figaro, and that was delightful fun, a little saucy, a little salacious. They all got to sing happily ever after at the end. People got with the right partner and everybody's happy and all the sins were forgiven. Almost, I guess. I kept waiting for the Countess to give him one more smack in the head just in case.
I don't know how she forgives that man. I mean, that is Andrea Ponte, I must say.
Yeah, well, De Ponte, of course, had his own career of interest. I think there's a great opera in De Ponte himself. This is a man who started out as a practicing Jew who became a Catholic priest, had seven children, right there is a sentence.
Wow.
Stopper, isn't it? Moved to New York City just ahead of somebody's police and became professor of Romance languages at Columbia University for 20 years.
Oh my goodness, I did not know that.
Isn't that a wonderful story?
That's fantastic. That is an opera. You're right. But I just want to correct you. So we've also brought, not that Sasselburg is Johannesburg, but we also did very, very offbeat version of L'Elisir d'Amore, Donizetti's beautiful opera at the beautiful theater in Sasselburg last year and in the latter half of last year.
But you didn't bring that to Johannesburg.
We didn't. But it's close enough.
That's true. An hour and a half or something like that. We should have gone. But I asked you before the break, one last question, I guess, which is putting aside people's normal prejudices about, it's an art form for snobs and, you know, rich people. How do you, going into the future, how do you attract people to come to see it, to listen, to enjoy it, to want to participate in the act of enjoying it? How do you bring this new generation, apart from the singers who quite clearly this country is blessed now with a whole range of wonderful voices that on stages here, but they're on stages around the world. How do you get people, ordinary people, to come in and enjoy it and just love it for what it is?
Well, I mean, it's a very layered question because you can't make someone love an art form. Once again, I'll go back to the early years. That is where I invest a lot of the company's time and money, so to speak, is in that first love. You know, we start with our opera block series, which our next one will be in November. We start with children as young as 3 weeks old. So the byproduct of that, of course, is that I try to then encourage those parents who sit there and go, oh no, we didn't want to end. And I say, well, why don't you get yourself a babysitter? And on Friday night, you come for a date night. So at the moment, I do feel like winning people over to opera is a one at a time. And it's not a mass kind of a, you know, marketing drive that we can do. You have to convince people one at a time to come. So it's you, Brooks, going to your friend who doesn't like opera and saying, listen, you know what? I'll buy you a ticket. Just come. And if you don't like it, you can leave after act one. I promise you he'll stay. And next time he's going to buy his own ticket. So I think it's a lot of kind of on the ground work in South Africa at the moment to reintroduce opera to the musical palette, because especially in Johannesburg with the fall of the, you know, Gauteng Opera and before that Opera Africa and all the other smaller entities, there isn't a lot of opera that goes on. So it's about reintroduction, really.
Yeah, I mean, I've personally felt sad about the demise of those companies. Opera Africa was really trying to do new and innovative things And my favorite, of course, not simply the new opera, Princess McGonagall, but they did a production of Aida, and on the stage, they brought a live cheetah.
Yes, I heard about the shenanigans of that cheetah.
And I was sitting in row 15 or something like that, and I was counting the number of people ahead of me who the cheetah decided to have for dinner first. I mean, because this cheetah was, you know, it must have been, you know, hypnotized because it didn't waver in its part, but it was on a very thin lead, and I kept going, if it decides to make a break for it, you know, what am I going to do? That sort of created a real... what shall we say, conditionality to the opera in question. Will we have a different version of Aida than normal?
Absolutely. Well, let me tell you, when I was in high school and PACT was still going, I attended I was actually one of the ushers. I signed up to be one of the ushers. At Loftus Versfeld Stadium in Pretoria, there was a massive version of Aida, I forget who the director was, with Virginia Davids and Sidwell Hartman and all these big names. And they had the entire zoo come through in the triumphal march. I mean, it was quite something.
I always feel cheated almost if there are no elephants.
Absolutely. And yeah, we're elephants. I'll tell you that. There were many elephants. It was quite something.
Tosca, of course, doesn't have too many wild animals in it, so it just has wild emotions.
Scarpia is a wild animal. Let me tell you, the Scarpia that we have created is really vindictive, psychologically damaged, narcissist, really a very, very layered character. And the stuff that he does is just, you know, you'll see tonight when you watch the opera. It's thrilling. You can't take your eyes off him, but he doesn't move a lot. He is like a cheetah about to pounce. Very still, very calculated. So I'll make sure that you sit in row 15 so that Scarpia doesn't come for your throat.
You've turned him into a damaged psychological thriller as opposed to just an evil, menacing.
Absolutely. And he's all white. He doesn't wear black. Normally Scarpia is dressed in black, and our Scarpia is dressed in white. And once again, when we saw the first dress rehearsal, I mean, I burst into tears when I saw him, because Conroy happens to be a very good friend of mine. And I've done many, many productions with him, and I've created many, many different layered characters with him. And when I saw him in that white leather outfit of his, I got tears in my eyes.
White leather?
Phenomenal.
Leather?
Yep, white leather.
He doesn't get a whip too, does he?
He doesn't. No, he doesn't get a whip.
That would have pushed the bubble a little bit.
Absolutely.
This production runs at the Joburg Theater from tonight, the 21st, on through the 30th of July. Obviously, people can book with web tickets at the usual internet address.
Yes,
I don't suppose they can just rock up and say, I want to see it. There might be a seat or two available. But if they're in Johannesburg, if they're not in Johannesburg, you take the production then to Cape Town too. Am I right?
We do. So we year first, and then in August we start rehearsing with our kids and chorus in Cape Town, and we open in the middle of September at the Artscape Opera House.
Well, that's right, because you have to have different choruses, and there are, because you can't very well truck 50 or 60 extra people back and forth.
Absolutely. And let me tell you, I mean, one of the things that I really wanted to start here was a children's chorus. And you know that the original has 8 altar boys in it, and I've decided that we're going to do auditions. More than 100 children came in Cape Town, and we have now 28 kids on stage, which is really, really so phenomenal.
That's going to be quite a crowd. No, I look forward to this. I look forward to all the things that I know that are supposed to happen, as well as all the surprises that you pointed out to me. And I'll begin to understand how you've taken a classic and turned it into a modern psychodrama that speaks to the difficulties and vicissitudes of contemporary life in South Africa and the world. And I hope that listeners will feel eager to come and listen and enjoy it and participate in it. And to wrap up, I thought, rather than just talking about it, I picked I guess the most famous aria in the opera, Visiddarte. And we had a talk just before we started recording whether we should play the Maria Callas rendition of this or the Birgit Nilsson version. Same music, obviously, but different singers, different styles, different approaches. And I think we both agreed that we would go with the Birgit Nilsson. And so we'll close Absolutely. Out this show thanking Magdalene Minar for her time. I know it's a busy day for her. You got dress rehearsals and preparations and all kinds of things and machinery on stage that suddenly decides not to work and everything else.
Hopefully not.
And now there's always something. And at the last minute, you save the day. And her production, Giacomo Puccini's Tosca, opens tonight at the Joburg Theater. And we'll close out with the performance of Birgit Nilsson singing Visiddarte.
Wonderful.
Thank you.